The name Synergy has impacted and influenced the sports technology landscape for almost 15 years. As the company has grown and helped change how sports are scouted and coached, CEO Mark Silver has been there for every step of the way. Mark began his career with Synergy Sports Technology, spending long nights logging basketball games onto the Synergy platform. He's seen a lot of change since that time. Over the next decade, Mark progressively rose to the position of CEO and successfully navigated an acquisition by Atrium Sports, remained CEO of the newly formed Synergy Sports organization, and ultimately led the company to another exit by parent company Sport Radar. Welcome to the Synergy Sports Podcast. I am your host, Milton Lee, Chief Reputation Officer at Synergy Sports and basketball pontificator extraordinaire. On this podcast, I will be talking sports technology use with some of the key decision makers at all levels of sport and finding out how sports tech impacts the way games are played and will impact the future of sports. Today's guest is my boss and friend, the leader of Synergy Sports. Please welcome Mark Silver. How are you, Mark?
Doing great. Thanks, Milt. How you doing?
Doing good. How's the weather down in Florida?
Hot and humid. It's July in South Florida.
How's that been affecting your golf game?
Not much to affect.
Okay. There's only upside there. As soon as we get Synergy Sports working on the golf apps. So before we get into your journey at Synergy, I know that you had a stop at the NBA with the Philadelphia 76ers. Was that your first job out of college, or can you give us a little background of how it all started?
Yeah, it was. Actually, I started sort of still in college, finishing my sport management degree with an internship. And so I spent the 2007 summer as an intern in the front office for the 76ers, sort of managing scouting reports, just doing anything that the front office would need, setting up rooms, truly an internship for 3 months. And when that was over, they were looking for someone to fill into an assistant video coordinator role that at the time was a yearly position. So this is when most video rooms were one person's deep, and maybe they had a part-time intern, and a few of the more advanced teams had a second person in there. But that's sort of how I got my start within the NBA.
The glamorous assistant video coordinator job, working till all hours of the night. Who was on the coaching staff, and what players were on the team about that time?
So that was Maurice Cheeks as the head coach. I think it was a year after Allen Iverson had left. So that team was actually led by Andre Miller, Andre Iguodala, Sam Dallenberg. They had a couple rookies that played significant minutes in Thad Young and Jason Smith. Willie Green was the two guard at that time. And we actually made a surprise playoff run, getting into the first round that year, which was unexpected for the team coming off the previous year. And I don't think anyone from a prognostication standpoint had expected that. But it was a great experience and gave me a lot of visibility, not only into regular season, but a little bit into postseason NBA basketball.
So when you were at the Sixers, what software were you guys using to cut up the video?
At the time, Exos was still probably the more dominant video editing system. It was when the shift was starting to occur to the new sports code editing system back then. But Synergy was actually a tool that we used. Synergy at the time was 3 years old, was just getting its start, but it's something we relied on pretty heavily and was what introduced me to Synergy. Depending on how far back you go in sort of NBA video coordinator lore, you'll hear stories of tape to tape to VHS to the first linear editing systems. When I was doing it, it was a lot of mapping satellite dishes to DVD-R recording. So at the practice facility, we would have about a stack of 8 DVD recorders and about twice as many satellite dishes. And every day, part of my job was sending out which games were available on satellite and mapping them there. And when it was a heavy Saturday in the heart of college season, I would then head down to the arena because the practice facility was about 25 minutes away at the time, and then repeat that process where we had probably 24 to 30 DVD recording devices and as many satellite dishes down there. And so that was just when Synergy still was early days, it was a redundancy process. So Synergy was capturing those games. They had just started their college efforts at that time. So it was still very new and doing a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new at that time simultaneously.
That, you know, I started with the Nets in 2010, so I was a Synergy native. There's nothing new about Synergy at the time. It was fully embedded in every NBA team. But when I talked, I was talking to Scott Layden, the former GM of the Timberwolves. And I think at the time, right about the time you're talking about in 07, 08, he was an assistant with the Utah Jazz. And he said, when he talks about Synergy, he's like, it blew people's minds because all the work that, you know, all these staffs and video coordinators were trying to do and cut up videos and get scout videos and then front offices trying to get, you know, prospect videos. And Synergy really was a pretty transformative technology when it hit the scene. Like people were like, oh my God, I can't believe how lucky we are and how much less work we have to put into this. Was that the sense you had?
So that process I just explained was just to capture video. And so that all that did is got games onto DVDs. And then at that point is sort of when the real work would begin before Synergy. And so if you think about what you would have to do if it's for a front office specifically, and they want to see a player most recent game, you can give them that DVD and say, here, it's game two on this DVD, go watch. But now they're having to fast forward and find when that player's in the game. And not only that, find the plays that are relevant. And you took that, that was just for one game. So a scout would be lucky. They'd have to be in the arena. Right. They'd have to put a DVD. They'd have to have it tied to a TV and so connected to a TV. And so you went from that process, which was scratching the surface just to get a glimpse of a guy playing, and that's just one player, to being able to watch specific situations or when a guy is on the court immediately on your own without having to go to a video room wherever you are in the world, and it was really at your fingertips. So it really was the same way that just video streaming in general revolutionized internet and how we all live in the sport world. It was no different once that video was able to get into the cloud before there was a cloud, and then have immediate access, and then layer in all this incredible data to be able to really see the situation you're wanting to see for that player or that team. It truly did change the way that sport worked and basketball worked at the time, and which obviously led to my desire to potentially work at Synergy, seeing of what it was starting to do when I was in the video room.
Talk a little bit more about that. So you see what Synergy's doing. You see how additive it is to the workflow, and then you transition over to Synergy. And so what did you think? You know, did you think you'd be here for 15 years, or what were your thoughts when you moved over?
Yeah, my thoughts when I moved over is I need to find a way to make a little bit of money while I keep in the game. So I think it's a familiar position that anyone who has tried to enter into the sport workforce, especially with teams, and even someone who may have been there for 10 years, it is a very can be very cyclical. You can be looking for your next job very frequently. And a lot of times you're just trying to hang on to stay in the picture and stay in the mix. And in all honesty, that's what Synergy was early on. I applied for a few different video coordinator and assistant video coordinator jobs across MBA college. Didn't get them in that first summer coming out of the job I had with the Sixers. And at the time, Synergy was a way to stay close to the game and, in full honesty, make some money along the way. So that was my approach, I think, the first year.
Were you doing that out of Philadelphia, or what? Like, were you able to work remote back in 2009?
Yeah, so Synergy, well ahead of the curve in remote workforce. The company has always been remote from 90% of its our workforce. And so, yes, I was remote at the time. I was at that point, I moved over to New York. And I was able to work from home. And the way that came about is I reached out to who was head of logging at the time, Brendan Pensis, still with the company today, talked with him. They had opportunities given the growth that was undergoing at the time. There was always games to be logged. And getting games around in 24 hours at the scale that we were trying to do back then was a challenge. So there was no shortage of games to be logged. And so given the background of where I was coming from, it was a pretty natural fit. And I sort of from game one of that season was thrown into the deep end and started my journey at that point.
And then so take us through that journey, like maybe walk us through the different positions, and then we can kind of circle back to how different positions helped you become the CEO of the company. But tell us where you moved from Logger to Next and Next after that.
Yeah, so I spent about a year and a half in the logging workforce, for what we call phase two logging, and that was the more expertise data entry of the product suite. Picked up every game I could, 8 games a day, right, 12-hour days, really just anything that they had available to be done, I would raise my hand and offer to do it. That led to helping them in the operations and logging department while I still logged and doing some additional work for Synergy then. And then in the summer of, I want to say 2010, already a very small team, saw a departure or two. They were looking for someone to really take over and build out the support department. Support had been handled sort of ad hoc by sales and by the account managers, but there was a desire to really do something more significant there. So myself and one or two other people joined the support team. At the time, that meant every client had my cell phone number. I was on call essentially 7 days a week. And so were the other guys that were in the department. And we really just started to formalize the support process. And so very quickly, I looked to take that as the manager of support and transform that from a individual support to a more traditional support group. And so that was centralizing a number through a call center just so that we had some control. And as we knew we were going to scale this thing, be able to direct calls a little bit more effectively, building out our first support web, which was the ability for clients to self-serve information, getting more formalized training processes done, and in general, just improving that overall experience for our clients. The way we talk about it and we have for a long time is we are the nation's, right? The entire basketball community's scouts and video room. So if a coach needs something and anyone who's worked in sport knows, they need it right away. And that's the approach that we take. So we have always been 24/7, 365, unlimited phone, email, tech support. And there's some great stories from early days of bandwidth issues and having to help coaches that at the time never used computers for anything they did before. And not only just dealing with the Synergy specific issues, but more general technology problems that would arise. And so that, that was really the start of it.
So, from there, I think we got the startings of a good book, Mark. So when we do Mark Silver's biography, I think the lesson is eight games a day, 12 hours a day. So work your ass off, move into support and create some systems. So get your hands dirty and really get into the details. And all the NBA clients had your name. So be available and be a client-centric company. Sorry, we got the good makings for some lessons from Mark Silver. What was next?
Definitely. And so from there, and it's a good lead way into, I naturally fell into an intersection between the client and what at the time was 2 to 3 developers as in the support role in the internal team. And so a lot of the feature requests, the problems, the bugs, things that needed to get communicated between the group sort of flowed through me naturally and our group and department naturally, because we didn't have a quote unquote product team back then. Our CEO at the time was leading product. And what I ended up doing is interfacing a lot with the technology team and our CTO and developers. And so my position from there transitioned into a product role, eventually becoming the vice president of products and services for the company. And at that time is when I started to really focus on new products, new features. What did we need to do to improve the experience for our clients, be really focused on our client centricity and the approach that we take there, and to start to grow that. And so I did continue on my management of the support team, but started to transition more away from support and focus more on the business and product side of what we were doing.
So as you're evolving with your skill set, and it kind of sounds like you're moving to almost professionalize area after area, or help professionalize it with your team, was there a momentum at Synergy that you guys felt of like, oh, wow, this is really taking shape and we're getting all the clients we want? Or was it still kind of startup phase where the daily reverberations were felt so strongly of like losing a client or getting a big client, or like what was that part of the journey as far as building the company feeling like while you were doing all these different roles?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both, to be honest with you. The way that Synergy was built was a very much bootstrap mentality. So there was some friends and family in an initial seed investment back in 2004 and 2005. But from there, we were grown on the strength of our ability to sell and reinvest those earnings into new product and growing the company. And so we were growing fairly quickly at that point in time. We're talking about the 2013 timeframe at this point. We had brought on a salesperson focusing on college women's basketball after the men's side started to take off a little bit more. At that point, all 30 NBA teams were now using the product. We had a pretty good saturation in the international top tier club market. But at the same time, every win was a big win and every loss was a big loss. And so it was a balancing act always of finding that balance between wanting to grow very quickly, but also having to do so responsibly. Which a lot of companies face in that sort of phase in their evolution and scaling and growth process. But it's a really exciting environment to be in, because it does have, it's very much a startup feel, and you have a lot of control over if you're going to succeed or not. But I think we really started to see that snowball momentum as we brought on that new sales person and really started to saturate the market down. So we had some pretty big milestones as we worked our way through that, right? When we got every NBA team in about 2011, that was a big milestone. When we started to pick up Division men's and Division I women's teams, and I think it was about 2015 and 16 where we eventually got every single D1 men's and women's team, which we still have to this day. That was another sort of big milestone. And there's a lot of those through the history of Synergy. We moved down into D2, D3, and NAIA basketball, which we now have almost every single team across those divisions using the product. I think it was about 2015, we partnered with the likes of Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour to start opening our services to the grassroots market and also sort of changing the way that college coaches scout and NBA scout that level of competition. And I can go on getting ahead of myself a little bit on the timeline here.
You know, I've got a sticky on my desk, and it says our company's purpose to empower sport, and all of the things that you just said and the milestones. And I mean, I feel like that really captures empowering sport. You know, you went into the women's game, you went into grassroots, you did all the NBA, and each time it seems like there was a voracious appetite for the technology. It must have felt great as a company that, you know, not only were you guys growing, but you were truly empowering sport. Any other thoughts that come to your mind of the effect that Synergy has had on sports? You know, how big of a role do you think it's had on, let's say, the technologyification of NBA and Major League Baseball and you know, those sports in general? And then in the future, what's your vision for how Synergy Sports is going to impact not only those sports, but the other sports that you have in mind?
Yeah, it's very rewarding to see. I think there's no question, if you ask anyone in basketball over the past 15 years, if Synergy had an impact on how they work. I think it to a T, they would say yes, and it's typically in a positive light. Along the way, I remember, right, there was a story, I think it was by USA Today, and it just pointed out how the scoring had changed in college. And they, when they interviewed a lot of the coaches, the response was, well, we have Synergy now, and it's giving us a lot of tendency data, so we're able to better prepare for our opponents, and that has led to a rise in defensive efficiency in the game. You'll see all the time, and we really enjoy, and we share it internally whenever we see it, players at the NBA and college level talk about being on Synergy as a way to improve what they're doing. Chris Paul did it after his All-Star MVP. CJ McCollum did it after he won his Most Improved Player Award. When Blake Griffin went to Detroit, he talked about getting on Synergy right when he got there to learn more about his teammates. So the feeling of being ingrained in the sport and hearing that sort of organically come out of players and coaches is probably the one of the most rewarding things, and really shows the impact that we have, because it's not it's a very organic conversation about how these different people, scouts, players, coaches, utilize the platform for so many different ways to impact how they approach their own game, their opponents, their next game. And those are the types of things that when you take a step back and look at it, it's like, oh, wow, like there's meaningful impact here of what we're doing in the landscape of sport.
Well, I love how the other day you and I were talking about the USA-Nigeria game and how the commentator friend Frischilla goes, well, they could have seen this guy in Israel. I mean, everybody's got Synergy, right? Or something to that effect. And you're kind of like, oh, this is a national broadcast on ESPN. And he's just saying everybody's got Synergy. It really yep. does make you feel proud about what you're working towards. So talk to me a little bit about other sports on the horizon, how you decide what might be next. And then maybe like the 5-year plan of, will it be all sports? Like what can you tell us and what can't you tell us?
Yeah, I think that the new sport is an interesting one. Synergy spent our first 13 years as a basketball company. So it took us a long time before we were even having the conversation of what is a new sport and what should that be. And we actually got into baseball, which I think was surprising. And I think as I started to tell different people within the industry that that's what we were doing, you sort of got a reaction of, really? That you're choosing baseball? There is a presumption that baseball had all the tools they need. It's the money ball game. They're so advanced in analytics and data that they didn't need it. But in reality, and going to the how we choose our sport, a lot of what we have done, it has been based on the sport reaching out to us, right? Coaching, video, data, it's a very close-knit community. And when they have these conventions, and right, if you're in a college environment, you have the teams typically sharing a building, they see what each other do. And what had happened is our current director of baseball, at the time was working for the LA Dodgers, and he is really petitioning us hard to come into baseball and saying, look, we need a solution like this. I'm trying to do what you guys are doing. And even with all the resources I have at the Dodgers, it's still not possible for me to go as deep and as wide as I need to go. And so that was really what led us into baseball, where we took a deeper look below the surface and said, hey, a lot of the problems we solved in basketball, which is, we don't have enough time to get all the video we need. We spend a lot of time calling colleges just to get raw video. We have to hire an army of interns to try to break those down into usable bites for our scouting and coaching departments. At the college level, they were doing like 3 games of advanced scouting, which means how many games they prep for their next opponent. And it was almost exclusively on certain pitchers because of the way the pitcher hitter interaction works in baseball. And we looked at that and with that push, decided to go into baseball. And I think, again, very much transformed the game, where now scouts, coaches, they had access to data and video at their fingertips that would have otherwise taken hours, if not days. And again, if you've ever worked in the industry, you know, a coach will ask you for something, a scout will ask you for something. As a video person or a data person, you'll spend the next 24 or 48 hours putting that package, that video, that data set together. You come back and that coach or that scout will say, what is this? Because they've already moved on. And what we do, because we catalog those games and that data is available when they want it, they can get it usually within 5 minutes. And so we now cover pretty much all of Division I baseball. All but a handful of teams are clients at this point. Same with MLB, primarily using us for that collegiate and amateur scouting. We've replicated that model of the grassroots and sort of the elite level of invite baseball, or anywhere where the best talent in the country or in the world come together. We want to make sure that we have that content and that data available for all of the different people, and those teams and players themselves at that level have that benefit of improving their game and having the best technology and resources available to them.
I mean, what a great case study. You guys created the infrastructure, and as the world's needs of technology and video and parsing the data were growing, you had everything set up when baseball came knocking on your door. That's a great way. So what are your views on different levels of sports? So we know that the NBA and MLB, there's a partner, and Division One baseball, softball, and basketball, there's, you know, almost all of those teams in those divisions. Tell us the differences of the use cases for the professional level versus the high major level versus the low major versus D2, like who's using Synergy for what?
Great question. So I'd say at the macro level, the further down you go, you can almost say the more impactful a platform like Synergy is, because the greatest and hardest resource for any person at any of these levels to come by is time, right? So if you're at the professional level, you're dealing with time in a different respect than when you get down to the junior college level. Your time is family time and right, it may not be a full-time role for you. And so the what Synergy allows you to do is really focus on the things that you need to and not have to do the work to get there as much. And so that gives you time back. And a lot of what we do is sell that. From who is using it, I think at all levels, you have pretty much everyone trying to use it in different ways. I think the NBA, they have, and professional sports in general, you have a much larger team, so you can go much deeper with it. You can do a lot more prep work. And as you go lower down, the ability to really get deep gets harder. And so it becomes how do we help a coach at Division III basketball have the same access to info and data and understand how to utilize that an NBA team might, right? Typically, that's going to be a very small staff, sometimes made up of a lot of graduate assistants and student managers, and we try to make that data and video accessible regardless of the level. But the profile of user, right, a scout to a coach to a player, really is similar across all levels. It's how deep can they go and how much time can they spend on the platform really getting to what they need, and how can we help anyone who doesn't have the time or the support staff to get there still get the value that they need to do what they do.
Right. So let's put on your futurist cap. As the world of technology is continuing to evolve and the thirst for data continues to grow, and things like IoT and 5G and, you know, more powerful cloud computing solutions become more ubiquitous. What does that mean for Synergy and what they might be able to deliver to their end users?
Yeah, I think is what we're seeing in a lot of industries. We're going to see a explosion and proliferation of more data, deeper data, faster data. And that's a result of different things that you had mentioned there, right? The proliferation of 5G and broadband, especially globally, right? The U.S. market has typically a fairly strong infrastructure base. So internet bandwidth, although still problems in a lot of areas, not to the same extent when we look at our global footprint that we have in other developing countries and our desire to continue to support and grow the game there. With edge computing and the rise of better and faster GPUs and CPUs, we will no doubt see improvements and growth in what we can do in computer vision and machine learning as it relates to automating some of the data we collect, but very much so creating new, compelling, and actionable data for sports in general. And so we'll no doubt see continued growth there. But for us, it goes back to how do we combine that, make it usable, make it scalable. Scalability is a huge challenge in our industry, because if you have a league that controls everything, they can implement hardware solutions, they can mandate all sorts of different things. But the further down you go, the amount of control that's available within that league or that organization typically gets reduced. And so, right now, for to be a Synergy client, you just have to send us video typically. And that's one of the really compelling things that we have and has allowed us to scale the way we have, is we don't have a huge hardware footprint or a huge upfront cost associated with being able to derive the data we do. We have a very strong logging department behind us that is managing over 1,000 people around the world that generates the data that we do either in real time or within 24 hours. And that's another key part, right? Everything we do is very time sensitive. Most of these teams are playing games back to back or within 2 days. So our logging and operations department are very much fundamental to what we do. But we see an ability to supplement and augment that with more automation and more computer vision and even more emerging technologies that are getting into the game on what feels like a daily basis at this point.
So you mentioned computer vision. It's something that we talk about a lot internally. Why don't you tell the audience just a quick definition of computer vision and then how it is going to enhance Synergy's future footprint and, or rather blueprint, technological blueprint in delivering new products and services faster.
Yeah, so computer vision is the concept, and we all, it's part of our lives on a daily basis. A lot of times we don't see it. In our use case, it's the ability for a computer system, so with a specialized camera or your phone camera or really any different type of capture device, is to capture a video and then using computer algorithms be able to identify what's happening. And so that can be, and I will say, as simple as, but it is by no means simple, to identify where the basketball is in that video and potentially follow it. And it could be identifying where the players are. It may be identifying what is actually the court based on the lines on the ground. And then once you can identify things, then you can start adding additional algorithms on top of that to do different things with that information. So one of the big things we do is an automated production suite that will understand where the players and where the action is and take a camera that's positioned on the half court line in basketball and has a panoramic view of everything that's happening, but then use those computer vision algorithms and different machine learning and deep learning techniques, which again is another way for computers to make decisions and create action, to actually follow what's happening in the game. And so with this system, we are able to produce a very high quality basketball production without the cost that would be typically associated with a production and broadcast of that quality. And so this is, again, really important as you look to scale globally and into different levels of basketball. Not everyone can afford to bring in ESPN for all their games, but they still want a quality broadcast production that they can share with their fans and with people who are interested in the game, which also unlocks other commercial opportunities for them because they can then sell advertising or look for other ways to monetize that content. So that's just one example of how computer vision can work. There's a host of other applications to it that we could probably spend another hour podcast talking nothing but emerging technologies, yeah, which may be something we can do in the future. But yeah, it's a really exciting time, I think, not just in our industry in general, of the application of these new technologies.
It's interesting that, a technology which might have had one application is opening the door. You use the term unlocking content. And Synergy was largely started as like a competitive advantage and looking at games and how to improve your efficiency. And then you look at the computer vision aspects that Synergy is diving deeper into and unlocking content and helping leagues and federations monetize is a huge opportunity that wasn't there before. So it's got to be exciting to be part of that as well. So we were recently acquired by Sportradar. How does that affect and enable what you want to accomplish? What what do you think is going to change in our future in the next couple of years because we are part of Sport Radar?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, as we went into this, the approach and philosophy that Sport Radar has with Karsten at the top of really helping partner and serve sport. It was a core ethos of what we did at Synergy Sports through the multiple sort of acquisition process and bringing different teams together. That was sort of always the fundamental principle we had. And we're now applying that at a much larger scale. So what you just talked about of unlocking new opportunities, that's something that Sport Radar can do better than anyone in the rest of the world. They're the leader in helping sport bodies commercialize content, engage their fan base, and doing different things with data and video that on our own would have taken many years to get to and would have been a very uphill battle. But being able to continue to do what we do, which is provide the sports themselves with the tools, the software, the workflows that they need to be successful, and then also being able to leverage what Sport Radar in a larger sense has done and continues to do, really provides this unbelievable end-to-end partner solution for every level of sport that I think is going to truly continue to revolutionize how content is captured, commercialized, how sport manages what they do on a day-to-day basis, the tools and power that they can give their members, whether those are teams, coaches, scouts, players. It's a really exciting time to be part of Synergy Sports and Sport Radar.
One thing that I meant to ask you earlier, you know, this podcast is to talk about Synergy, but also to talk about your journey and get to know you better. I think for our audience, they might find it interesting to know what is a typical day for Mark Silver like? And is it just on Zoom calls all day? Are you putting out fires? How much can you be strategizing? Give us some color on, you know, what keeps you up at night and how the day unfolds.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of calls, hopefully more on the strategy side than the fire side, but it's typically a healthy balance. We are a global company, and so we have people truly all around the world in three time zones, from Australia to Europe to both coasts of the U.S. So with that becomes a very interesting time management challenge that we all face and anyone in a global company faces. But a lot of what I do is making sure that we are in a good position as a group, now part of Sport Radar, to serve the needs of our clients and serve our employees as well. Right. We are in, as much as we do data and video and all of the software, we're still in a people business, both internally and externally. And a lot of what I'm doing is focusing to make sure that we are in the best place to be successful, both in the short and long term, and both the internal and external focus of that. And as much as I love what I gravitate towards is the longer term strategy product aspect, as you heard before, that's sort of where I came up through, still where I'd like to spend most of my time. There's the realities of running a large organization within an even larger business now that probably isn't all my time, but it's a great thing to work through, mostly because of the people we have at Sport Radar and Synergy Sports as a division of Sport Radar. So hopefully that answers that question really well.
With a 24-hour workforce with senior executives all over the world, do you have some kind of hard and fast rules you try to stick by of, like, you know, okay, dinner every night at 7, or, you know, my workout time at whatever? Like, how do you keep sane? How do you?
Yeah, I'd say I probably don't do a good enough job of protecting some of those, but that conceptually, yeah, that's the idea. I try. There's a basketball game I try to play it Wednesday, now that we're allowed to play again. There's some workouts in the morning I do a pretty good job protecting, but yeah, it's a challenge. I think setting up those rules are important for anyone, right? We hear and talk and it's especially true, right? It's not just me. It's our organization in general. I talked about it before. We are on call, and that means that almost everybody theoretically is on call, and we have to figure out how to support that so that we aren't overloading and burning out people. And that includes all the way up to myself and finding that balance. And so it's important to lead by example. So taking time off is a big thing, and that's protecting your day-to-day, but also actually taking vacation days and things of that nature. So I wish I had the answers that I could share with everyone to make everyone life easier. But it's a challenge that we all work toward.
Right. It's the pilot's direction of when the oxygen mask falls, make sure you take care of yourself before those around you.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great. Fascinating journey. I'm sure a lot of twists and turns that we didn't even get into, and the future's exciting. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Appreciate it, Mel.